On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Puberty is never easy, especially for girls. A years-long metamorphosis from child to adult, years of change and new signals from their own bodies and the world around them. When the signals come early, it's a wake-up call all round to girls, families, the country. The talk is of girls beginning signs of puberty very early, 10, 9, 8, younger. But what does that mean, and why is it happening? What's the right response? This hour On Point, the big unease over girls and early puberty. You can join the conversation. Are you seeing it in your own family? What do you make of it? How should we respond? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in this hour, we'll look at the outcry over the Vogue magazine Diet Mom, the Vogue contributing writer who put her overweight 7-year-old daughter on a very strict diet and then told all. But first, to the unease over early puberty in girls. I'm joined by Elizabeth Weil, contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine. Her article, Puberty Before Age 10, A New Normal? Appeared Sunday in the magazine. She joins us from San Francisco. Elizabeth, welcome. Very glad to have you here.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
And also from San Francisco, we're joined by Dr. Louise Greenspan, pediatric endocrinologist at Kaiser Permanente San Francisco. She is part of a team of researchers from Kaiser Permanente, Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City, and Cincinnati Children's Hospital that is investigating potential environmental causes of early puberty in girls and what the incidence really is. Dr. Greenspan, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, there's been so much reporting on this, and you came out with a big piece just in the last few days. And right off the bat, you're quoting a mom who has a young daughter of her own, you know, sort of looking out at all the signs at what she sees, saying, you know, who gets pubic hair in first grade? I mean, things get, you know, nitty-gritty in a hurry here. What's actually going on, Elizabeth?
Well, there are a lot of mothers concerned about, and fathers too, concerned about what they're seeing in their daughters, you know, seeing signs of puberty in girls before they're expecting to see them, you know, early in elementary school. And it's very disconcerting for everyone involved.
To say the least, and she's charged, in her case, this is a mother you talked to out west who's taking her daughter all around trying to find some response to this. Dr. Greenspan, you know, I think a lot of people observe what they observe, but it's hard to understand what the overall trend is. Do you see the population of American girls going to puberty earlier, and what exactly does that mean, Doctor?
Well, I do see this clinically, and we have also found signs of this in a long-term study that we've been doing with my co-workers at Kaiser Permanente, Cincinnati, and Mount Sinai. And this long-term ongoing study, which is sponsored by the NIH, mm-hmm. came out in August of 2010 and showed that about 23% of black girls had breast development at age 7, and 15% of Hispanic girls had the same. And that's at age 7. So what I see clinically and what we see in the research really does suggest that this is a true phenomenon starting early.
What are the elements of, I mean, what constitutes puberty? Let's kind of define our terms so that, you know, families, mothers, girls listening can understand really what we're talking about. This is not just the beginning of menstruation. It's kind of a whole process, doctor. What are the elements? What do you look for?
Yes, you're right. Menstruation is actually seen as an end phenomenon when we think of this from a hormone point of view. The first signs are breast development, breast budding, and also signs of pubic hair, although you can get pubic hair without having true puberty. Okay. When the two happen together, that's usually a sign. And then over the next 2 to 3 years, the girl has a lot of other things going on. So her body shape changes. She has a rapid growth spurt. She might have acne and oily hair. And then the end of the process of puberty itself is the first period.
So when you see a headline like Elizabeth's, you know, puberty before age 10, a new normal, does it look like, and Elizabeth brings us a lot of nuance on this, but when you look at that, does it look like a new normal to you, or is that still the exception? Do we have a clear statistical picture of what's happening?
Statistically, it does look like girls are going through puberty before age 10. And our study will shortly be coming out with the average age of onset so we can get more data of, for example, age 10. But we used to say that age 8 was the age to start. And it looks like in most of America, that is girls are really in puberty by then. By age 8, 43% of black girls and about 31% of Hispanic girls in our study showed breast development. So by age 10, we suspect that a lot of girls will definitely have been started in the process.
I want to be sure I understand the trend that you say. You used to say, what, age 8 used to be normal and it's younger than that now? Or help me here.
Yes. When I was in training, in medical school and in pediatrics training, we were taught that age 8 was the earliest that a girl should be going through puberty, should be starting breast development or pubic hair development. And if she started before then you had to rule out medical problems or illnesses that might be causing her to go through puberty early. And what we're saying now is maybe that cutoff should be earlier. Maybe for some girls it's 6 to 7.
Elizabeth, what have you seen, what have you heard in your reporting on this subject? What kind of age and compared to what kind of historical typical benchmark?
Well, you know, I'm not a scientist, I'm a journalist, but I've talked to lots of mothers who are seeing this in their daughters. You know, they're seeing signs of breast growth at age 6 or 7. They're seeing, you know, pubic hair development at age 6 or 7. And they're very worried about it, and they'll often bring their daughters to the doctor, and they'll hear what Dr. Greenspan is saying, which is, you know, this is part of the realm of normal now. We are not suspecting that your daughter has some outside illness. We don't even necessarily think your daughter needs treatment. And that's a hard place to sit for a lot of families, especially if the experience is very different from what the mother's was. You know, if she started puberty much later, and that's what she's expecting to see, it's a little difficult to accept that this is okay, that this is normal. So I feel like there's a cultural adjustment going on as well as all this new research into what age might be normal for girls to start puberty.
Dr. Greenspan, we'll look at why this might be happening, but again, I'm very attuned to people listening and listening very closely here. I mean, What is okay? Is normal okay? Or is normal itself influenced by environmental issues? I know obesity is often pointed to as one of the issues for early onset. Is normal even okay these days?
That is the big question. I think some of us feel like our young girls, the canary in the coal mine. Is this new phenomenon a sign of things that aren't right with the rest of their world? And that is a big question, and that's something that we are trying to find out, as well as other groups and other researchers are trying to look into.
What are the potential problems associated with this for a girl who goes to puberty particularly early? Are there problems with it, or is it just no problem?
Well, we don't know about the onset of puberty having long-term health ramifications, but there are data that suggests that women who have an early age of first period are at higher risk for breast cancer. So we know that that's been
You mean much later in life, presumably.
Much later in life, yes. But early age of first period is one of the many risk factors for breast cancer. And in fact, this study that I'm supported by was started by the NIH as a breast cancer grant to look into ways that we can prevent breast cancer. But what's more important, I think, to the parents of these girls are the psychological and social ramifications of being developing and going into puberty earlier than other girls or earlier than you're really ready for. So we know that girls who have earlier puberty are at higher risk for behavioral and psychological issues such as depression and eating disorders and other psychosocial problems.
Why?
Well, there's a lot of – that's a good question. It may be that their brains are not yet developed enough to handle what the hormones are telling their brains. It may also be that people – this is probably the most likely cause – people treat girls differently after they start looking like young women. And people might be treating a 10-year-old girl who looks like a 15-year-old girl in a way that she shouldn't be treated for another 5 years. So whether that's boys asking her out to go on dates or things like that, or that then puts her at risk for further poor choices or behavioral issues.
There's another element that I read from in Elizabeth's story about growth and early puberty, that puberty includes, she reports, this final growth spurt, after which most girls stop growing. If that growth spurt starts too early, Elizabeth writes, it ends. It may end too early also. Is there a growth issue here?
Yes, although these girls are usually taller than their classmates because they are having a growth spurt earlier. Mm-hmm. However, they will stop growing within 2 years after their first period. Most girls only grow 2 inches after that event. So if you get your period at 10 and you're 5'4", you're a very, very tall 10-year-old. That's maybe the height you have for the rest of your life. But that doesn't necessarily mean you're that short. But you may be shorter than you would have been if you had gone through puberty later.
Elizabeth, we're going to come back and look at a lot of the issues raised here. But in your reporting, who do you find is more uneasy with this, the girls themselves or their parents, Elizabeth?
In my reporting, the parents, you know, the girls are girls. And they're taking in some of what is happening, and they may have questions about what's going on with their bodies. But the anxiety, at least in my experience as a reporter out there, was coming much more from mothers. And I have to say fathers were fairly disconcerted as well.
And Dr. Greenspan, do we have an environmental issue here, or do we know that yet? Is this a environmental chemical problem?
That is something that we are delving into in our investigation. There are lots of theories as to why this might be happening. I think obesity is a big part of this. I also think that you have to look at environment in a broader term. So in our study and in other people's investigations, we are looking into environment as in the chemicals in the environment as in the built environment, what house are you in, what's in your neighborhood, but also the social and family environment.
That's a lot to look at. We'll come right back and do that. Dr. Louise Greenspan, please stand by in San Francisco, and Elizabeth Weil there as well. Listeners, we're talking this hour about the big unease over girls and early puberty. You can join us. Have you seen it in your family? Girls 7, 8, 9 showing signs of maturation, of growing up fast, too fast? Did you freak out? Did they? Is it a big deal? Is it not? We're at 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the big unease out there in the land over girls and early puberty, first signs coming younger and younger, and parents and top doctors wondering why. We're at 800-423-8255, and you can join us this hour. Have you seen this in your family? Do you have a theory about why it's happening, and what's the right response individually, in public health terms? What's going on with our girls? 800-423-8255. Talk. Elizabeth Weil is with us. She's a contributing writer for the New York Times. Her big piece just last weekend was Puberty Before Age 10, a New Normal? Dr. Louise Greenspan is with us. She's a pediatric endocrinologist at Kaiser Permanente San Francisco, part of a big study being conducted by her group, plus Mount Sinai in New York and Cincinnati Children's Hospital on environmental issues and the incidence of early puberty among American girls. 800-423-TALK for your calls, and we're happy to have them and questions. Jill in Concord, Massachusetts, thanks for calling. Jill, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. Mm-hmm. I have a daughter, and I had always heard that puberty was starting early, so and that it could be a sign that, you know, the kids were eating too much fast food or pesticides in the food. So my daughter has never had fast food. She was brought up on only organic meat, organic milk, okay, organic vegetables.
Yep.
She's 8 years old, and she's starting puberty. She has acne. She's getting pubic hair. And she's so sweet, and she'll look at me and start crying and say, Mommy, I don't know what's wrong with me. I feel so weird inside, but I'm not sad.
Mm-hmm. So, and you feel like you did everything right, or at least the best that you understood what was right, Jill.
Absolutely. Because my worry as a parent, as a mom, is already, oh my goodness, is she going to like boys early? Does this mean she's going to be early sexually active? You know, what does this mean?
All kinds of flags go up. Let's look at this. Stick with us, Jill. Dr. Greenspan, first to you. I'll come to you, Elizabeth. Dr. Greenspan, what do you say to a mother like Jill in her situation here?
Well, as a physician, my first job is to make sure that there's nothing medically going on. So with an 8-year-old girl, I'm less likely to be worried about that. But that would always be something that I think about with the younger girls.
Forgive me, but what can this be an indicator of if it comes, what, at 7 or 6?
So there are hormone problems, specifically something called central precocious puberty, which is often the most common diagnosis, although that's a diagnosis you make after you've ruled out other diagnoses.
Okay.
And that is a situation where the pituitary gland and the other parts of the brain that control puberty wake up too early, and we don't know why. And that has been a phenomenon as long as there have been humans on Earth, and that is a different situation than the one that Liz Weil described in her article. Mm-hmm. That's a diagnosis, and that often happens in much younger kids.
Okay.
There can also be a brain tumor or other hormone problems in other glands in the body that can cause early pubic hair development.
If it's just too early.
Yes.
Here we are.
With an 8-year-old, mm-hmm. I'm not so worried about that.
Okay. But nevertheless, here's Jill. Her daughter says, you know, I feel weird. She's done organic all her life. Should that have helped? Does that make any difference?
We don't know. I think personally what I take with my family and what a lot of us in the field do is something called the precautionary approach, which was exactly what your caller did. Mm-hmm. The precautionary approach is an idea that instead of saying a chemical is dangerous once it's been proven dangerous, we actually say, unless it's been proven safe, we're going to assume it's dangerous. So if you are worried that conventionally grown vegetables are dangerous and you can afford organic food, then there's no harm in buying organic food. So taking the precautionary approach, which is exactly what the caller did, I think is a very good idea. And we are investigating what chemicals and endocrine-disrupting chemicals might be involved in this process.
But she's got an 8-year-old daughter, and still, here we are. Elizabeth Weil, what did you come away thinking about mothers and daughters and families in this situation and their response? I mean, you can hear the upset. You report on hearing it again and again as you looked around, Elizabeth.
Yes, and I'm a mother as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so what I heard from a lot of families is exactly what this caller is saying. They want there to be a reason. They want there to be a way to protect their daughters. They want to feel that there's control. And unfortunately, there is not that much control for most families. And then what it comes down to is when you have your kid, maybe she's going into puberty early, that what there is to do is support that child and help her have the best outcome she can have in the body she's got. And so maybe that means being extra attuned. Maybe that means paying extra attention to she's 8 years old. We have to treat this girl like she's 8 years old, no matter what else might be going on with her body.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that's not a foolproof solution either, but perhaps that's what we've got for now. And I was very convinced by the idea that you're not necessarily doing a kid a service by turning early puberty as an 8-year-old into a medical crisis, into making a girl feel very self-conscious mm-hmm. about what's going on with her body. You know, all of her peers, by the time they're in their teens, will have gone through puberty. In some ways, it's a self-correcting problem, or some aspects of it are self-correcting. And while it's very difficult in the moment, you know, I keep thinking about that old British poster, keep calm and carry on.
Right. Sometimes
and maybe that's what we've got.
But to Jill's question then, I mean, yes, we understand that. You want to be supportive of that child. But Elizabeth reports on parents who are looking to intervene somehow, Dr. Greenspan. Are there things that can or should be done? I don't know, injections, or is that overkill? What about intervention to try and stop it, slow it down?
Well, if it's a very young girl, then we would consider using medication to slow down puberty. With an 8-year-old girl, we start worrying that the risks of that and also the message of that outweighs the benefits. And I think the message speaks to what Liz just said. When you give a child an injection for what is a normal process when there's nothing wrong with her body, I think you're telling her there's something wrong with you and that mm-hmm. your body is not okay. Mm-hmm. And I am concerned that we are then sending a message to girls that the way their body is changing is not something that they should accept. And what does that set them up for psychologically downstream? So I really work with parents to try and get the parents through the concept that we don't need to stop this medically and that let's look at the whole package. And there are other things you can do to protect your child from the ramifications of early puberty. Because if this is what's going to happen and we're not going to stop it, let's stop the things that are that can be a problem and can be caused by the early puberty. And by that, I mean the depression, the eating disorders, the other things that parents worry about, which are not inevitable and which I do think the parents have some control over.
Boy, you really get our attention, though, with that litany. Jill, we wish you luck, and I appreciate your call. Let's go to Sophia. Hi, Sophia. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I started developing at the age of 9. And I was uncomfortable with it at first.
Yeah.
But my parents told me that if I'm healthy and strong, everything would be okay. And now I'm a black belt in karate, and I teach karate to little kids to help them feel confident themselves. So I wish I was a little taller, but mostly I'm comfortable with myself now.
Sophia, how old are you now, if I may ask?
I'm 13.
So you saw things happening at 9. What, did you then go out and get involved in the exercise and discipline of karate? Was that one of your responses to it, Sophia?
Yeah, that was.
And it sounds like that. Did that help you? Did it change the way you were developing, or was it mainly sort of psychological and fitness advantage?
I think it was both. I think learning to control my body in karate really helped me a lot.
Did you feel unusual among your peers, among, you know, girls in your class developing at age 9, or was it, you know, were there plenty of others too, Sophia?
Well, I never really thought about it. So I don't know if any other girls were going through what I went through at the time.
Yeah. Boy, we're glad you went out, girl, I should say. Either way, we're glad you went out and kind of took charge of your destiny there, Sophia. That's really good to hear. I mean, and congratulations to you on doing it. Keep it up. Elizabeth, you know, here's a story. Everybody's got their own response, but here's Sophia finding a way to sort of feel in charge.
You know, as a parent, at least that's the response. You know, I could almost cry that I would want for my own kid of just like, let's move through this. Exercise is one of the few things known to help. Let's keep physically active. And have a good relationship to your body. You know, puberty is hard no matter what age you go through it. And going through it young makes you extra vulnerable. But if you can, you know, stay feeling like your body is yours, it's not being taken away from you. It's not going on some ride that's determined by your environment or whatever else. I'm a journalist. I'm not a doctor and I'm not a psychologist. But to me, that feels so important to not get derailed by whatever physical changes you're having.
Sophia, you're great. Keep it right up and we're glad for you. Let's go to Spring Hill, Tennessee. Ward's calling. Ward, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. And I appreciate all the comments from Dr. Greenspan and Elizabeth. My question is, I have a 13-year-old daughter, and of course it's always been a little bit awkward for me watching her grow and watching her develop. She's in full-blown puberty now. But my question is, I have a theory, so I'll form it as a question. But, one is, does diet and growth hormones and food have anything to do with this early development that we're seeing? Because my daughter, as I've seen her go through elementary school and now she's in eighth grade, you see girls all over a gamut of different areas of development that they're in when you go to school to see your daughter or whatever. So you notice that some are way farther ahead than others and some are way farther behind than others, and there's those in the middle. And my daughter, I believe she got her first period around 11.
Okay.
And so I felt like I was a little nervous at first. I thought maybe that's a little early. And then, you know, the more women I talked to said that's absolutely normal. 11's a pretty normal age. The doctor also said that. Now, we didn't take her specifically because of that reason. But while we were there for routine, you know, checkups, whatever, we said, is that normal? She said, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing, and then I'll hang up and listen. The second thing is the social media, like Disney Channel, MTV, VH1, music videos, they portray younger girls acting older. Does that have something to do with the psyche that's telling the brain, hey, I need to catch up from, you know, they're seeing all these things. Do they need to catch up? Is that what the brain's thinking?
Ward, your antenna are way out and picking up on things that both of my guests think and write about. We'll look at it. I appreciate your call. Let's look at the biological first, and we'll come to the social/media. Dr. Greenspan, can we just put down first, what is the typical age for menstruation among girls? What has it been historically? What is it today? Is that also changing or not?
There's no data yet that suggests that early age, that first period is coming earlier. We are investigating that in our study. At the moment, it looks like, depending on your ethnicity, it's still around 12 and a half-ish for average age.
And how does that compare with, I don't know, 30 years ago? I think I saw 12.8 in Elizabeth and then 12.5 now. So it doesn't look like that piece has really moved a lot.
It's a little controversial. It depends on the way that you analyze the data. Certainly, we think several hundred years ago there was a much higher age of first periods, but it also looks at it depends on the population that you look at and what was going on nutritionally and in terms of wars and other things going on. It's a little bit hard to look at. But there are our investigation and other investigations will be coming out with that information within the next year or two, because we really don't know yet. It's funny that you'd think that we would know when all women in America get a period at some point.
Sure.
They get their first period.
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't been studied enough, so we really don't have the answer to that yet.
And what about Ward's question about diet, about growth hormones in food?
Those are two things that might be related to this phenomenon, but there's also a lot of chemicals everywhere. So we are looking at the chemicals in plastics, the chemicals in personal care products, the chemicals in the home environment, as well as hormones in food. There's a lot of potential endocrine disrupting chemicals all around us, and we're trying to find out which one of those might be related.
So when you say canary in a coal mine, on the biological side of that, is the canary what? If this is a canary, is it warning us of chemical pollution, danger? How do you look at it?
We are concerned about that. We know this is a phenomenon. We know this is happening. We don't know why yet.
There's the careful response of a scientist still in the midst of her research, and we respect that. Elizabeth, what about on the social side? You hear Ward, and you write about this as well, about researchers looking at the ramifications of exposure to more sexual imagery and culture. He's looking at media, social media, and more, and wondering if that might serve as a trigger somehow that goes from the eye to the mind to the body, Elizabeth.
Right. Here we need more research, too. But there is definitely, I think, a psychological risk of of kids being exposed to a lot of sexualized images young. And then all of a sudden, you yourself are young and you're in a body that looks older and people are going to treat you as older. And you run a risk of having a sexuality put onto you before you develop one yourself. And, you know, I know it's frustrating to keep hearing this, but we need more research. But there does seem to be a likely risk of girls sort of getting dissociated from their own bodies and their own desires, which they'll come into later. You know, they're not going to come into those at age 9, no matter what is happening in their bodies. And so it seems a mistake to think that we should be looking for one answer in any of these fronts, with diet, with chemicals in the environment, with the social issues, that there are so many factors out there. And at least where my mind goes is to how are all these getting layered together? Are they building on each other? And how do we think of the whole world that our girls are living in? And how do we help them navigate that?
Mm. Dr. Greenspan here, Babette writes to us on Facebook. She says, it's not just the hormones. She says, no, you know, let's take into account the over-sexualization of our children from TV, movies, even young adult books like Twilight. Can cultural signals trigger early puberty, doctor?
There is some suggestion that that's true. When we look at children who have been victims of sexual abuse at a young age, we do see some of them having early puberty. And we used to think it was a cause-effect in the direction of the puberty and then the abuse. But there is some data that suggests that it's actually the other way around, that children that are victimized may end up going into early puberty. And when you look at the structure of the brain, the parts of the brain that are receptive to visual stimuli are very close to some of the parts of the brain that may control puberty. So this odd explanation actually may have a physiologic basis.
And you mentioned earlier even war. I mean, these sort of stressors in the cultural, even political environment there can trigger early puberty?
Yes. Yes. So we know there are populations that are incredibly violent populations historically, some tribes in Africa, and their girls have a much earlier age of pubertal development. And if you think about it from a Darwinian perspective, if you think that that life's going to be tough and we might die early, well, mm-hmm. we should reproduce early. We've got to get to that pregnancy state to have babies before something bad happens. And so that may happen in this old traditional culture. And then we fast forward to 2012 in America, and we see situations where a lot of girls are in home environments or other environments that are not necessarily safe, not necessarily as free of stress as they should be.
Listeners, we see you lining up with calls and comments, and we will come to them after a short break right here. Dr. Louise Greenspan with Kaiser Permanente in San Francisco, please stand by. Pediatric endocrinologist there. And Elizabeth Weil, who wrote the big story for the New York Times Magazine, Puberty Before Age 10 and New Normal. You can join us. Do you have a theory about what's happening here? What's the right response? What's going on with our girls? How do we keep them centered and safe and healthy? 800-423-8255 is our number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the big unease over girls and early puberty. First signs coming younger and younger, and parents and top doctors wondering why. Elizabeth Weil is with us. She writes for the New York Times Magazine. Big piece there, Puberty Before Age 10. It was headlined last week. Dr. Louise Greenspan is with us. She's a pediatric endocrinologist at Kaiser Permanente in San Francisco. She and others in the middle of a big study of this right now. You can join us. What is the right response here individually in public health terms, cultural terms? And should we be up in arms over this or just settle down? What's going on with our girls? 800-423-8255 is our number. We've got lots of callers. Steve in Evansville, Indiana. Steve, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I heard one time that if a girl lives with a non-biological father, that can cause early puberty. I was wondering if your guest had heard of that or what their comments on that were.
Let us pick it up, Steve. Elizabeth, you make mention of this in your story. What did you learn?
Yes, surprisingly, there are good studies showing that it is protective for a kid to be living with her biological parents, and she's at increased risk if she does not live in a home with her biological father.
Dr. Greenspan, what's the explanation for that, if that's true?
I think it may go back to what we were discussing before the break in terms of perceived stress for the child. So when a child has a change, such as particularly with the father, at a critical age, and this speaks to sort of windows of susceptibility, because it looks like there's a certain age window during which this may be related to early puberty. And I think that the theory is that it might trigger stress responses in the children, and that children that see or perceive more stress, somehow that triggers the early pubertal response.
Here's another listener online asking, what about the role of a mother or grandmother taking hormone pills in their lives, Dr. Greenspan?
There's no data that suggests that is a contributing factor.
Okay. It's nice to have something ruled out. Maggie in Harwich, Massachusetts. Maggie, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. Good. It's good to talk with you. How are you today?
Very well, Maggie. What's on your mind?
It's a question. We're doing a lot of discussion about young girls and the effects, different effects on young girls. We're missing, I think, half of the equation. What's going on with young boys? Are they maturing earlier? And how does that all figure into the mix?
Let us pick it up. I mean, the focus really has been here. But Dr. Greenspan, what about the male side of the equation? Is there a change in puberty in boys? We don't hear about it.
We don't hear about it because it looks like it might be going either way. And the research I looked at specifically was looking at girls, although there are other researchers looking at both genders and specifically at boys. One complicating factor is that it's a little bit confusing how obesity is affecting the boys, because fat tissue is responsible for eventually raising estrogen levels. And so it looks like obesity in boys might actually make puberty later, although there's some data that suggests that they might be getting some signs of puberty earlier. Mm-hmm. So with boys, it's a much muddier picture, and other researchers are looking into that.
Why do you think there's so much more attention given to girls here? Is it just because the boy's so muddy we can't tell, or do we just culturally get more up in arms about sexuality and girls?
I think it's both. I think that the picture's pretty clear in girls. Therefore, we're getting more publicity for girls. But I also think that society it's not an equal society, and I think people are more scared of girls blooming sexuality than boys.
David in Chesapeake, Virginia. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. I guess let me say, first of all, I don't think that this phenomenon is new. I'm 45 years old. I've kind of suspected this for the past 20 years, especially with, say, the African or the black females and Latin females. And a lot of it, I think, is due to physiology, just with responsibilities, within the family. over time, you know, Latins and blacks, I think, are exposed to a lot more responsible type things as a female early on set in their age. And that kind of has to do, you know, you think about, well, if we think happy, then it has a lot of changes that, that it kind of triggers within your body, and the same thing with responsibility roles. But my question was, is, you know, they mentioned doing some studies within, say, the Africans and or, you know, black females and Latin females. What have they done any, I guess, do those studies also include Asian and Europeans? Because based on my travels, I have seen, you know, not only with the black females and Latin females, but also with European females having those same types of things over the past 20 years.
David, let us pick it up. Dr. Greenspan, what about African Americans, Latino Americans? And then David blows it up sort of globally here. What can you tell us about, we made a brief reference to that, but what about Asian, Caucasian? Could these things be somehow have purely physiological roots, or is it always bound up with culture? And what about differences there?
So in, I'm fortunate in that in our investigation, we have three different sites that the NIH is supporting. So we had 1,200 girls that we were looking at.
Across the country.
Very diverse, mm-hmm. across the country. So ethnically, the Cincinnati group, the New York group, and the San Francisco group all had very different rates of the different ethnicities. We mm-hmm. made up very, very different groups. So it's nice. And the San Francisco site was one of the first sites that looked at Asian Americans. So we were unique in that way.
Okay.
And in terms of both breast development and pubic hair, the Asian American girls do seem to be going through this later than the other ethnicities. And the Caucasian girls are somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
But one question that brings to mind is that, in general, our Asian population tended to be less obese than our other populations. So sometimes we have to account for obesity as well as other differences.
And the differences, I see. And globally, I guess you're not looking globally. I mean,
others are looking globally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a large group in Europe looking at this, and they're seeing the same phenomenon. They're describing it in different ways, and they don't have as much ethnic variation as we do here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. But from my understanding of the literature, mm-hmm. this is not just an American phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. It's really a global phenomenon of earlier
yes.
puberty concerns. Elizabeth, thanks for that. Lynn in Albany, New York. Lynn, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I had two daughters, so I still have them. They're adults now, who went through very premature puberty. They came to the United States as toddlers from a third world country and were malnourished, which I understand is has an effect on their
okay.
puberty.
Mm-hmm.
And they were both given Lupron so that they would reach 5 feet.
Well, can you tell us, Lynn, how old were they when they began hitting puberty?
They were 6, 7 when they started getting breasts and underarm and pubic hair.
And the medicine you mentioned is what intended to help their growth continue?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm sure Dr. Greenspan, if she mm-hmm. wants to, can
yeah.
fill it in much better than I can. And they both did hit 5 feet, but just barely. But my real comment has to do with the social effects of hitting puberty when a child is so young. The early sexualization of children who are still children.
Yes.
And the difficulty of dealing with the hormones when you're still children. You know, we talk about 14 and 15-year-olds going through puberty and the problems with their hormones, and
sure.
that's a piece of cake compared to someone who was 8 years old. And when one of my daughters was in fourth grade, the boys in her class ranked the girls by breast size, and she won. And
yeah.
I think that's an appalling thing about our society and how we have sexualized our children. Also, as I was listening, I heard the comment talk about we worry about girls and not boys. And the fact of the matter is girls can get pregnant and boys don't. And there's a big difference between having a baby at 13 and fathering a baby at 13.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think...
Lynn, you've lived it directly. Our time is short here, but you've put a lot on the table. Dr. Greenspan, I mean, there's a whole range of things in that story. But it's the discomfort culturally and sexually that the girls and their families confront when this comes on, and that is real.
It is real, and this is where I really hope that Liz's article can start to bring this up as a discussion throughout communities throughout the United States to have empower parents to make the changes that they need to make so that that mother could go to the school and give those boys and have a teacher give those boys an education session about how this is a totally inappropriate way to treat the, mm-hmm. the girls in their class, which will be a lesson that they could learn for the rest of their lives. And just as we're making a change with – we ban cigarettes. And just as we're making a change with what we're doing with obesogenic foods, it would be nice if every parent who has a girl going through this could make a change in their little community and their environment locally. Because if everybody did that, we could make a change to say that 8-year-old girls are 8-year-old girls, no matter what they look like.
Liz, Elizabeth Weil, it seems like really the point of your article to say, look, we're in the midst of this. We don't understand all of the dimensions of it, but let's be supportive of everybody who's living it.
Yes, and particularly be supportive of the girls.
Absolutely. Elizabeth Weil, we thank you for your reporting on this and bringing it to everybody's attention. We're grateful to you for your time today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Weil, contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine, joining us today from San Francisco. And also in San Francisco, Dr. Louise Greenspan, pediatric endocrinologist at Kaiser Permanente in San Francisco. Dr. Greenspan, good luck with your research. We really hope it's successful and effective. And thank you for your time today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
In a moment, we'll look at the outcry over the Vogue magazine diet mom who put her 7-year-old daughter on a strict diet. This is On Point. When Vogue magazine put its April issue on the stands, many readers were shocked to find, nestled in among the endless photos of skinny models, an article by a Vogue contributor and New York mother who browbeat her 7-year-old daughter over her weight and put her on a very tough diet. Step aside, Tiger Mom, with the headlines that followed. Here comes Diet Mom. If obesity may be a major reason why young girls are maturing earlier physically, was this mother over the top when she went all out for weight loss with her 7-year-old daughter? Is that too much? For some advice, we turn to Cynthia Bulick, director of the Eating Disorders Program at the University of North Carolina and co-author of Runaway Eating. She joins us from Chapel Hill. Cynthia Bulick, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Now, you know, this article got a lot of attention, I think in part because it was a Vogue person writing it. We think of Vogue and we think of all those practically malnourished models. And then here comes the sort of tiger mom of, you know, getting all over her 7-year-old daughter, who was overweight, and she just got very tough going after every little corner of this girl's diet to hammer that weight down, and she did hammer it down. Even while the girl was growing a couple of inches, she lost, what was it, 16, 18, 20 pounds, something really substantial. And people are looking at this, Cynthia, and saying, is this a mom taking charge of a problem that could really be a hassle at the very least for her daughter, even a real lifelong health issue? Or is this a mom over the top in cramming, you know, stern food constraints onto her 7-year-old? How do you look at this story, Cynthia?
You know, Tom, I think what this really illustrates for me is that parents have absolutely no playbook for how to have the conversation about weight with their kids. In fact, recent research shows that parents are more afraid of talking about weight than they are talking about alcohol, drugs, or sex. And so I think what we're getting is these kind of extreme solutions that are just really bound to backfire.
Well, I mean, here, what do you do, though? You've got a 7-year-old daughter. You want them to be healthy. You know we've got a national problem, 20% plus of children obese. And you go to the doctor's office, and they show you on the chart, and your daughter's off. You know, this mother just got all over it. She cracked down on everything, really controlled that child's diet. What do you suggest?
Well, I think, again, we've sort of lost our parenting compass about these issues about feeding and physical activity. American parents used to be able to do this. I'll bet you every one of your adult listeners remembers a parent saying something to them like, don't eat that now, it'll spoil your supper.
Get your hand out of the cookie jar. Eat your vegetables.
That's right.
And you kids get outside and play.
Bingo, exactly. But now, if you watch TV, the food industry, or as I call them, big food, if you look at what they're marketing for after-school snacks, mm-hmm. calorically, they're equivalent to a dinner. So we are all spoiling our dinners, and then we're eating our dinners. So as parents, it is most definitely our responsibility to teach our children when to eat, when not to eat, portion control and appropriate physical activity. But frankly, if parents don't know how to do that anymore, it's really hard for them to pass that information on to their kids.
I mean, some are responding so emphatically. I mean, we've got these news reports. Just last month I saw here one in, this was in Alabama, where authorities said that a 9-year-old girl died after being forced to run for 3 hours as a punishment for having lied to her grandmother about eating candy bars.
Right.
And then here's another about a grandfather who took his grandsons out, 3 grandsons, 8, 9, and 12, to the Grand Canyon. He thought they were overweight. He wanted to get them into shape. And, you know, he hiked them for, 19 miles or something until they were just collapsing.
Right.
And he's been found guilty of child abuse now. These seem such extreme responses, and yet there is something we need to respond to, it would seem, in our culture when it comes to weight.
They are desperate responses, and I think that's why we really need a coordinated, almost national agenda to help parents relearn how to parent about feeding and about physical activity. But I will say emphatically, the one way not to approach it is what I say, you don't put your kid on a four-letter word. And that four-letter word is diet, D-I-E-T, because we know that diets don't work. And that's why the industry is so successful. It's so successful because it fails every time and it brings you back for more.
So lay it out. You've got a 7-year-old. He or she is, let's say, 20 pounds or 15 pounds overweight, which is a lot when you're 7. What do you do?
I will lay it out by going back in time. What we need to do is developing those parenting skills earlier. In fact, from the time of conception onward, for healthy eating, regulated eating, parents being involved in parenting around eating to prevent the problem so that it doesn't get out of hand and we don't start seeing so many of these extreme solutions.
And since we can't go back in time, and not all parents have had that rhythm of interaction with their children, but here's your child now, 7 and overweight.
We grasp the skills, learn the skills, go up to the USDA website, understand what a portion size is. Do those things by saying, get your hands out of the cookie jar, only maybe not that way. Mm-hmm. But help your child develop regular eating patterns first by modeling them yourself.
When you see this Vogue contributor and her daughter now posing in, miniskirts for the paper or for the magazine after her Tiger Mom diet with her daughter, what do you see there? Is it they're both slender now. Is that a picture of success?
I worry about the relationship. I worry about the future because my big concern is that this is just launching a lifelong pattern of yo-yo dieting and believing that dieting is a solution when really it's a problem.
Cynthia Bulick, director of the Eating Disorders Program at the University of North Carolina's Department of Psychiatry, author of Runaway Eating. Cynthia, thank you very much for your insights today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Listeners, thank you as always for joining us. You can continue the conversation at the On Point website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.